call to order the State Government Finance Policy Committee for April 16th. I need approval of the minutes. Who would like to do that this morning?
I move the minutes.
Representative Joy moves the minutes for April 12th. Any opposition? Hearing no opposition, I'll approve. I'm thrown into this. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The minutes are approved. Right away, Chair Cleborn's state government bill. Chair, to your bill. Oh, moving stuff around.
Well, I didn't think you wanted to be Jenny Cleborn today. I mean,
maybe you didn't want me to be Jenny.
I realize it's a great name, but you know, I thought yours is more appropriate. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Today we're going to do a walkthrough of the DE3, which will be the State Government Finance and Policy Bill that we'll be bringing to the floor. And so with that, we're not going to take any action today on this, but this will be referred to Ways and Means. So I will move the bill to be referred to Ways and Means, so we can adopt the DE3 amendment.
We have a motion.
Or the DE4. It's the DE4 now.
Yep. Right. We have a motion to move the bill to Ways. And we're going to. Okay. And I think we're just going to go to nonpartisan, Chair, if that's okay.
Sure. They can walk through the bill. That would be awesome.
So if nonpartisan could go through the bill and whoever you'd like to take that.
Mr. Chair, members, I'll start with the walkthrough of Article 1. There is a spreadsheet in your packet that goes along with Article 1, but I think it will be more helpful to just walk through the language quickly. The first changes are actually changes to the 2023 session law, and so that's why you'll see that language reprinted here. But the first actual change is on page 2 on line 2.5. This is language we heard at the last committee hearing. It's a clarification related to the grants management funding, just to make sure that this is not an additional amount, but a carve out of a previous amount. Then again, you'll see more reproduction of 2023 session law, but the next change is on page 4, line 2, clarifying that the public TV grants are not one time, and this does match up with what's carried in the fund balance. The next change you'll see on line 4.17 to 4.21, this is clarifying language requested by AMPRS to allow them to use a percentage of the appropriation for administrative purposes. And then I move over to page 6, which is where we now start with the new appropriations. The first item is the Capital Area Community Vitality Account. This is an account that was created in the 2023 Economic Development Bill, but there needed to be additional authority under law to spend this money. So you'll see that there's $4.8 million that goes for a grant to the City of St. Paul Department of Planning and Economic Development, and then $200,000, which is transferred to the CAP Board for implementation of the Community Vitality Grant Program and the Community Voices Initiative. And so this language constitutes approval by law for the expenditures of funds from this account. The next item is the bottom of the page. You'll see $43,000 is appropriated from the general fund to admin for space costs for tenants that provide public-facing professional services in the Capitol complex. The next item is on section 5, creates a new healthy and sustainable food options account. This is money that will be appropriated to the Commission of Administration to enhance and sustain access to healthy food alternatives in the state capital. And there's a $500,000 transfer from the general fund to this account. In section 6, $445,000 is appropriated to the Commission of Administration to design, construct, and equip additional green space on the site of the parking lot C in the state capitol complex. And section 7 is an appropriation of $300,000 to the Commissioner of Administration to replace a statute that's currently in the statutory hall in the U.S. Capitol with a statue of Hubert H. Humphrey. And then moving on to page 8. This section 8, cancels $4.95 million of the general fund appropriation that was made in the 2023 session for implementation of the Capitol Mall design framework. But then the next section, subdivision 2, reappropriates $6.162 million to the Commissioner of Administration for similar purpose. This, in part, is a technical change because the administration requested authority to spend the money beyond the biennium because of delays in some of the implementation. And because of the budget rules, we technically have to cancel the money and reappropriate it so it doesn't count as new spending. But the additional 1.12 is additional spending. And I think that completes the spreadsheet and the Article 1.
Thank you, Ms. Roberts. Is there Article 2?
Yep. Mr. Chair, I'll do Article 2, and then Ms. Grubin will do Article 3. These are the two policy articles of the bill. There is a House research. There's two types of summaries in your packet. One is a table format summary that lists out the source bills that you'll see in this DE, as well as a general summary of each section. And then there's separately a more traditional section by section summary if you want more detail on individual sections. When I do the walkthrough, I'm going to walk it through at a pretty high level. So section 1 of Article 2 on page 8. Is the section that comes from House File 4354. This requires the Public Utilities Commission to engage in the tribal consultation process, the same as other state agencies. On page 10, starting with section 2, running through section 13, is the first set of sections that relate to the work of the Office of Administrative Hearings. This is House File 3854, the first engrossment. I'll note on section 2 in the subdivision 4 there, you'll see some new or modified language related to the way that public data or not public data is described in court proceedings. So that moves ahead to through section 13. Section 14 on the bottom of page 15.
Mr. Guerin, could I stop you just for 1 minute? I would really like to call attention to those lines. I just want to make sure that Lee Nash is aware that from 1014 to 1021, this is new negotiated language between BOMA and the Office of Administrative Hearings. So I just want to make sure that that's been flagged. Is that correct, Mr. Guerin? That is the new language we inserted?
Correct, Madam Chair, yes.
Thank you very much.
Continue, please.
So moving ahead to page 15, section 14 is the first section of the minute bill related to IT services. There's just one section here, and then a bigger chunk will come a little bit later. On page 16, section 15 comes from the Office of Administrative Hearings bill. Section 16 is House File 3582 with some amendments requiring capital project replacement accounts. Section 17, starting at the bottom of page 17, is the first in a series of sections that comes from the administrative bill from the Department of Administration. This is the base House File 3431 that runs through section 18. Section 19 is also a Department of Administration section, but I'll note that this is new. This is language that authorizes vehicles that are used by the Office of Ombudsman for Long-Term Care staff to be unmarked, similar to other types of state vehicles that are allowed to be unmarked. Section 20, sections 20, 21, and 22 all come from House File 5328. This is the governor's policy bill. Section 20 relates to the electric vehicle accounts. Sections 21 and 22 relate to grant agreement process for capital project grants. On page 23, section 23 is the another section related to the Department of Administration's technical bill. Section 24 at the bottom of page 23 is House File 4815. This is the change in the date, the reporting requirement for the legislative report related to uncollectible debts. And then on page 24, sections 25 running through section 35 is all comes from the Department of it comes from minutes, House File 4748. This is the Information Technology Administrative Bill. And that runs through page 34. And then continuing on with minute provision, section 35 on page 34, comes from Representative Bonner's House File 4749. This is the requirement that certain local governments report cybersecurity incidents to Minute. And then moving ahead to section 36, on the bottom of page 37 is House File 3182, as amended by this committee. This is related to participation by exclusive bargaining units and certain employers in the public employee insurance program. And then the bottom of page 38, section 37, running through section 41, goes back to the Office of Administrative Hearings Bill. These are the sections that relate to the Office of Administrative Hearings work with respect to the Fair Campaign Practices Act. Then at the bottom of page 40 is a new section, section 42, that requires Capitol Security to provide emergency assistance and security escorts within the Capitol area when requested by a state constitutional officer. This is a new language that's in this DE4 amendment. On page 41, section 43 relates to cemetery assessments, and this comes from the Department of Administration's House File 3431. And then moving ahead to page 42, section 44 is Representative Stevenson's bill, House File 3606, that requires the Board of Architecture, Engineering, Land Surveying, Landscape Architecture, Geoscience, and Interior Design to provide notice to license holders when their license is up for renewal. On page 43, section 45 is new language related to the use of the Uniform Commercial Code account by the Secretary of State. So this is an account that the Secretary uses to manage online filing systems related to business filings, and this is a new section in this DE. And then starting in section 46, running through section 49, this is the Representative Freiberg's bill, House File 4972, related to notary public changes. And then moving ahead to page 45, the last couple of sections in Article 1 are repealers. Section 50 is the repealer of the false political and campaign material section. This comes from the Office of Administrative Hearings Bill. This is the section that has been declared unconstitutional. Section 51 is House File 4798, the repealer of the Federal Education Implementation Report. And then Section 52 relates to the Minute technical bill repealing several sections within Chapter 16E. And Mr. Chair, that's the end of the state government policy article, Article 2.
Thank you, Mr. Gearing. Ms. Griffin, if you would.
Mr. Chair and members, I'll walk through Article 3, which is the local government policy article. Section 1 is the language of House File 4339, as amended by the A1 amendment. And this section authorizes Hennepin County to award set-aside contracts to businesses and social services organizations that employ individuals eligible for public assistance or who require rehabilitative services in the absence of their employment, even though those businesses or organizations don't meet the threshold of half or more of the employees meeting the criteria. Section 2 is the language of House File 3346, which authorizes Anoka County to build a jail and criminal justice center in any city in the county to replace the current jail. And it also authorizes the sheriff to keep an office in that new jail and criminal justice center. Section 3 is a repealer. It contains language from House File 3345, which repeals the statute that it bans that it prohibits a political subdivision from imposing a ban on merchant bags. That's paragraph A of the repealer, and then paragraph B repeals a special law that phased out the imposition and collection by the City of St. Paul of franchise fee from a public utility. And Mr. Chair and members, that concludes Article 3.
Thank you, Ms. Griffin. I believe, Chair Cleburne, it's time for testifiers.
That'll be fine. I just want to make sure that we're really clear that I have moved House File 3431 and the DE4 amendment. I just want to be really clear.
And I verified that with the CA, and I think we're good to go to testifiers. So thank you. You caught the same thing I did, but this wonderful person sitting next to me said we're good. Okay, so for our first testifier, Secretary Simon, could you come down, please? And on deck is Mr. Hirsch. Mr. Secretary, if you'd state your name for the record and your name and title for the record and continue with your testimony. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Steve Simon, Minnesota Secretary of State. Thanks for the opportunity to testify. I want to thank Chair Cleburne for including expanded flexibility for the office in our use of the Uniform Commercial Code, or UCC, account. This is on page 41 of the DE. This account, this UCC account, was created in 2004 when online services were just expanding in the business services area of our office. And what it did is it allowed our office to charge a fee to offset the costs of providing online expedited services and to offset the costs of providing information contained in the computerized records maintained by our office. So fast forward a little bit to 2007. The use of the funds was expanded to support the creation and maintenance of other online or remote lien and business filing systems. But of course, since that time, since 2007, a lot has changed. So the funds have allowed the office to build and maintain a robust online filing system for various transactions in our business services division. But as I mentioned, this isn't 2007 anymore, and computer systems have become much more integrated. They're not siloed like they were at that time. They're really blended together in so many ways. So the security and other infrastructure to support and protect the databases and online systems are difficult to separate. It's not so easy anymore to say that this particular cybersecurity measure is limited only to the business services side of our office and not other portions of our office. So the flexibility in this DE amendment will allow our office to use these resources to support, maintain, and expand all computerized record systems. We considered this year, actually, a few months ago, we considered asking for a general fund appropriation to support these continued improvements. But the flexibility in this DE means we can efficiently support and continue to secure these systems. In other words, this is no new money, not one dime, not one penny of a new appropriation. This is just a creative way around that. This is saying that we have more flexibility to use current dollars in other areas. And that's really it. That's the bottom line. I do want to point out one other portion in the bill, too. I want to thank Chair Cleburne for including what was House File 4972 in this DE. It's a bill making important technical and conforming changes to the notary statutes. A lot of people don't know that our office processes notary public applications and renewals, maintains a database of notaries public, and helps provide information and resources to individuals intending to become a notary. So these are small and technical changes, but they're important to both those that serve as notaries public and to those individuals who seek notary services. So thank you for your time and attention. Happy to answer any questions, but I appreciate the opportunity today. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Secretary.
Thank you.
If we could have Mr. Hirsch come to the table.
Chair Hewitt, members, my name, for the record, my name is Brandon Hirsch, and I serve as Director of Government Relations for Minnesota IT Services. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today in support of House File 3431. MINUT is grateful to Chair Cleburne, Lead Nash, and members of this committee for your continued bipartisan commitment to policies that advance cybersecurity protections for Minnesotans and for continued updates to MINUT's statute that provides the direction for our work with state agency business partners. With the inclusion of the language from House File 4748, the committee continues its support for modernizing MINUT's enabling statute in Chapter 16E. These efforts support MINUT's evolution in meeting our business partners' needs, strategies, and plans as we all aspire to meet the expectations of Minnesotans. The provisions included in the omnibus bill will enable MINUT's governance to align with national IT industry best practices and more modern ways of delivering services, referred to as product models. The bill also removes outdated and impractical requirements that existed before IT consolidation occurred and aligns statute to current business practices, which lead to more effective government. Further, House File 3431 carries an important tool to improve information sharing with local governments and public schools across Minnesota with the inclusion of language from House File 4749. Information is one of our best defenses, and by improving information flow between federal partners, the state, and local governments and schools that are often impacted by targeted attacks, we are making important steps to continue closing gaps in our cyber defenses. Mr. Chair, members, Chair Cleburne, Minute welcomes our partnership with you to advance these important measures this session, and we look forward to continued collaboration with you and this committee to confront future challenges and opportunities in cybersecurity and digital service delivery.
Thank you, Mr. Hirsch. You. And Mr. Craig Johnson of LMC, I have to say your whole name because there's about 20,000 Johnsons in the city here. So. Please state your name, title for the record, and continue with your testimony, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. Craig Johnson, one of the many thousands here on behalf of the League of Minnesota Cities. Some brief comments, Mr. Chair. I am going to be speaking to the language related to the capital and project replacement accounts, starting on line 16.9 of the DE amendment and going through section 16 of that. So, Mr. Chair and members, just briefly, what this section does, and similar language was discussed early this session in this committee, is requires that if a local government is going to get any funding from the legislature, general obligation bonds, appropriation bonds, general fund money, whatever, for a capital improvement, there would be new requirements in place on them in order to qualify to get that money. And those are laid out in this section and include setting aside funds over the coming period of time for the maintenance and eventual replacement of that project. Sounds common sense. If you're looking at projects and as a legislator, you're tired of seeing the projects come in over and over and over, except that if you already had the fiscal capacity to finance a project over the next 20 years, you could have done that. And cities would have likely done that because it is a much more timely and functional way to do a project. It's what we normally do, is use local debt capacity and revenue streams to finance capital improvements. Occasionally, projects are too big for that to work. And so we come to the state for assistance in getting that done. Now, to get that fund, we would actually have to set aside a rather substantial amount of money in addition to whatever other inputs we were already making to do the state matches and other things for the programs. So while we understand the intent, and I have been working with the chair and will continue to, and with Chair Lee, whose language this is, to work on this. We're in fact meeting later today on this. It is very problematic and would make it so that communities with very few resources would find it extremely difficult to get any assistance from the state unless they could somehow come up with a very large pot of money on their own. A couple specific things, Mr. Chair, if I can just point them out. In the section, I better get the right line number for you. In subdivision 2, on line 16.17, the term capital project is used, so just to be clear, that is not, and then it follows with three sections of statute that are referenced. So this is not just an application to GO bonds, it's any state financing. Do appreciate changes that the author of this legislation, Chair Lee, has made to the language to try and better define some of the terms in here, but the language is still very problematic in that regard. The amount of money that has to be set aside is very, very unclear in here. What it does say is that the amount cannot exceed the amount that amount required to be set aside cannot exceed the amount required or received from the state for the project. But that can be a lot of money, and it can be for a project that doesn't need to be replaced. For instance, where it references 16A.695, that's state money for land purchases. Well, you don't need to set aside money to replace a land purchase 20 years after you do that investment. So there's a number of things like that that are going to need to be worked out, Mr. Chair, and we will look forward to working with Chair Cleburne, Chair Lee, and others as this bill moves forward. But the League and also in consultation with the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities at this time cannot support this language in the bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson, for your testimony. And Mr. Cap O'Rourke. Can you hold a second, sir?
Okay, Mr. Chair. We're ready.
Okay. Mr. O'Rourke, if you could state your name and title for the record and continue with your testimony.
Mr. Chair, members, my name is Cap O'Rourke. I represent the Minnesota Association of Small Cities. We advocate on behalf of the over 700 cities with populations under 5,000. I am here today to talk about the same section that Mr. Johnson was, Article 2, Section 16, the capital project replacement accounts. For our small cities, this is a hugely problematic policy change. The majority of our small cities that come to the Capitol with bonding requests or capital requests are usually wastewater, drinking water, or transportation requirements. And they already, the reason they're coming to the state is they largely cannot fund these on their own. Having to set aside money to replace these costs, and a lot of these, especially when we're talking about wastewater and drinking water, are driven by state requirements. So having the state require us to meet in certain levels is driving a lot of these replacement requirements. We then go to the PFA. We already, it's established what we can afford. We already have to raise our utility rates, and then we're getting money on top of that. To then have to set money after all that to the side to then replace these is just going to be hugely burdensome, and these are our smallest communities that are already struggling to meet these. Most of our communities are not coming to the Capitol with big bonding requests for glitzy community centers or ice arenas or whatever you have it. These are really need-based issues, and if we are going to have to set aside money, what you're going to see and is a growing divide of have and have-not cities, where the larger cities are coming in and they may be able to set aside and they may be able to come and get their bonding projects, but our smaller cities are just not going to be able to maintain that, and they're going to suffer with their lack of capital projects. So we have significant concerns. We will work with the League and other stakeholders to try to make this language more workable, but right now it'll really create a split between larger cities with more resources and our smaller cities.
Thank you, Mr. O'Rourke, for your testimony, and I apologize for hashing your name. This is a public hearing. Are there anyone else here that wants to testify to 3431? Please approach the table and state your name and title for the record.
Thank you. Hi there. My name is Elizabeth Waple. I'm with the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities. And apologies to the committee administrator for forgetting to sign up ahead of time. I actually also want to express our concerns about the same replacement fund provisions that that Craig and Cap mentioned. And I just, you know, I want to say it's not just smaller cities that this impacts. I know, you know, I've spent a lot of time talking with the city manager of Mankato, and she keeps looking at it, can't figure out how they're going to make it work for their extremely large wastewater facility. And there is a host of problems with it. We will try, you know, we've got meetings, as Craig said, with the author. We will work with Representative Cleavorn. We think that there are better ways to handle it, some of which are already in place already. So we just would urge that the committee relook this approach on it. So thank you very much.
Thank you for your time and testimony. Is there anyone else in the room? Chair, seeing no one else, I'm just going to recap the week here real quick for our members and staff. Today we did the walkthrough and testimony. Wednesday amendments are due by 12 noon. Please have them to us. On Thursday we'll do the final markup and move it to Ways and Means. Members, please keep your bills together in the folders, as we would like to not print them, and it looks like the chair is telling me she wants to say something.
Lead Nash just asked me if he could make a few comments.
Lead Nash, make a few comments.
Well, Mr. Chair and members, I think maybe some of our members have some questions as we head into the festivities of this week so that they can better understand where the chair is coming from on some of these things. So I would defer first to my members, and then I can wrap it up as well. Just because some of this is brand new to the bill, and we could either offer amendments if we don't understand it or understand it and maybe let it go. So if my members have questions first.
Well, Lee Nash, are you asking for procedural questions, or do you want to
clarifying questions from my members?
On the bill?
Yep.
Is that what?
Yes.
Chair, it's your committee. You tell us what you want to do. Okay.
It's okay. I think it's okay to hear what the concerns are. I mean, if we can have the time between now and Wednesday noon to resolve some issues, I think that would be a good plan.
And, Mr. Chair, we have plenty of time today.
Oh, I'm just trying to follow procedure.
We will give some lenience.
So, are there members that would like to see on either side, I guess we could say? President Carter, please go ahead.
Thank you, Chair Hewitt and Representative Claiborne. I, too, share the same concerns regarding the capital replacement costs. I couldn't say it any better than the three that came up and talked about it. I have a number of cities in my district. They're small. And some of the projects are just extremely large to raise the funds when more money is needed to, within the city limits, to manage what they have now. So I do have grave concerns with that particular section, and hopefully we can work on that. I'm not sure how it'd be more palatable to my small cities, but we need to keep them in mind. I do have a question, though. It's on this subdivision 3, so it talks about this minimum deposits fund balance. So if this bill is to pass, is this saying that the monies that the cities have to set aside would be set into account held by state government, or would this be a local account?
Thank you. It is my understanding that it's a local account that would be that the auditor would also be responsible for looking into, but we could ask either Ms. Griffin or Mr. Gehring to clarify.
Mr. Chair and members, I think that this language is contemplated with the accounts being local accounts.
Thank you.
Carter, follow up?
Yes, thank you. Again, I'm going to reiterate that this section of the bill is very problematic for my district and for many others within the state of Minnesota. The other part of the bill, which I need to read more into, it has to do with the bag ban. So we're concerned about plastic bags, but there are a lot of other plastics that are running around or flowing around on the countryside. And to narrow down just to the plastic bag without looking at plastics as a whole is problematic there. And I think more work needs to be done in that particular section, too. Thank you.
Chair Claiborne, did you have something to say? Or?
I would just like a clarifying question to Representative Carter, if that's all right. Representative Carter, I know that we heard a larger plastic ban bill. Are you asking for inclusion of that larger plastic ban bill?
Representative Carter?
No, I'm not. Thank you, Chair. No, I'm not asking. I'm not asking for that. The bag ban, the reason why it's partly problematic is because I support recycling, not banning things. And a lot of these plastic bags can be reused to make, say, outdoor chairs, and which can be used at parks or wherever. And to just ban something without looking at how it can be reused, just me personally, I have a problem with, because I'm all for recycling and reusing. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Carter. Representative Joy.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a quick thing falling back up on the capital improvement plan. I have mixed feelings on this one. I when it comes to water infrastructure, roads and bridges, I think that's something we have to do, and I don't know if putting matching funds to that to get these small cities taken care of, and where I stand on the other side of talking about it is when it comes to community buildings, stuff like that, community buildings or whatever else is put there, because they have to have some input in that. I really think our focus should be, when we move through, and part of this I like, because it kind of changes my vision of bonding, is if we move bonding to trying to get it done every 2 years or every, when we're supposed to get our job done, if you have bonding that comes to the floor, I think, with just infrastructure, roads and bridges, water, sewer, we'd probably pass that completely every 2 years, because there's not all the other stuff in there. But and I think this is a good intention to what we're looking at, but I do think sewer, water, and those facilities should be not included in this matching funds. When you get to the small cities and they just want to have their communities clean drinking water and stuff like that. I really think that's something we got to work on, but I'd be willing to work on it. But thank you.
Chair Claiborne, would you like to respond? Or?
I would just ask Representative Joy, you know, we have so many small communities with sewer, water, lift, infrastructure needs. You and I both, we know what that's about. I'm just trying to figure out what is the most cost-effective way for us to do these infrastructure projects. And so as I talk to Chair Lee going forward, is there a regional structure that we could put in place instead of every small town? I'm just wondering what your thoughts would be on that.
Thank you.
Joy?
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Chair Claiborne. One of the things we're working on in my district and kind of north of my district is a regional water, rural water, which there are some cities going to hook into that. I think that's another good collaboration, working together so that we're, again, when we're going for an infrastructure plan, you know, they're going for like $9 million to work on this regional water. It's not just each city coming to the table. And those are things we can work on. You know, sewer, of course, probably has to stick more local, but the regional water is something, you know, I do support, because when we're moving forward with that and even going for a fixed cost for rural residents, if you put in this regional water and you put in hydrants every 1 mile, you can possibly reduce their insurance because their fire rating would go down from a 10 to maybe a 7 or an 8. So I think the regional water is a good thing and something we need to definitely start looking at with the arsenic and everything that's going on. But, yeah, no, I'm very open to that. Thank you.
Right. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Chair Claiborne, just a question on 5.33. If you could, I think this was an allocation from last year, but just kind of remind me, we've got $12 million in the first year and $8 million in the second year for transition to hybrid work environment. And
Chair Claiborne?
If you could just clarify it.
Yeah, that's a no change item for this year. It was something we passed last year.
Correct. Mr. Chair and Chair Claiborne, but what was, I just remind me what that was for hybrid. Who's getting that money?
Okay. But
remind me that, please.
What's the question?
$12 million in the first year, $8 million in the second year.
I'm having trouble finding the question. So.
Who's getting that money for hybrid work transitions and relocation?
Thank you, Representative Kosnick. Chair Claiborne.
Thank you. I appreciate the question. I would have to go back and look at my notes from last year exactly why we did that, but this is already existing law. It's not something that we're changing.
Representative Kosnick.
Maybe if the nonpartisan staff could refresh my memory.
Mr. Chair, Representative Kosnick, this was an appropriation that was made to the Department of Administration. They did a study after COVID to look at the space needs of the Capitol complex, and this is to help implement that study.
Representative Kosnick.
Is that in relation to moving out of this building or anything, or that just work from home?
I don't know if admin, I don't believe it was directly related to this building. It was just the entire Capitol complex and the executive branch staffing needs.
Okay. We can follow up offline. I do realize that it was passed last year, but it's still a significant amount. I'm just curious when I saw it in there. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Nash. Lead Nash, I believe you wanted to.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Chair Claiborne, to provide some clarification before we head towards possibly drafting amendments that we may or may not need. My first question, Madam Chair, is, or Mr. Chair, and for the Chair, is on line 7.5. Section 5, the Healthy and Sustainable Food Options Account Transfer. It says that this is to create and sustain access to healthy food alternatives on the state capital complex. Can you describe what that is? Are we having a garden out there to plant vegetables, or what are we doing?
Derek Claiborne.
Thank you, Lead Nash, and I really appreciate the question and an opportunity to talk about this. As you know, we have cafeterias in the Capitol building, which the public uses, and we have cafeterias and transportation that the public uses. And because the public is only here for a short period of time, it is difficult for us to recruit a vendor to provide the services because it's not, they don't have the ability to run it as a full service. Well, they don't have the opportunity to have the same customer base when we're only here part-time. So this is to help administration be able to recruit and keep vendors here providing those food services for the long haul for us to have them here.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to Chair Cleburne, is this a one-time appropriation? Because it doesn't clarify whether it's ongoing or one-time. Just trying to clarify that before we move forward.
It does say in fiscal year 2025. I would ask Ms. Roberts if she would address that.
Ms. Roberts.
Mr. Chair, Representative Nash, I'm tracking it as a one-time transfer. We possibly could add some language to make that absolutely clear.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And we can talk when we're doing amendments and marking the bill up about whether that's something we should or should not do. I'd like to move on to, Mr. Chair, with your indulgence, to lines 40.24. And the Chair and I spoke about this last night. We'll give everybody a chance to get there, but it's capillary security. Mm-hmm. And Madam Chair, or Mr. Chair and Madam Chair, since I got here 10 years ago, I've served as the Republican House liaison for capillary security. And the charter statutorily of the capillary security is to provide provide security services for our defined campus. And it's actually in maps. You can see what it is. But I understand that there is a potential need for something that is not actually on the campus for one of the constitutional officers. And I certainly respect the need for security, but the Chair and I did talk about something that I want to make sure that either I draft or the Chair drafts to put a sunset on this request. Just because in doing that, the transit time from here to somewhere that's not on our campus is significant and could actually dilute what we're doing here from a security need on our very large campus. Once again, I'm not trying to be problematic. I'm just trying to define the needs that we have here to keep not just ourselves and everybody else that inhabits these buildings, the judiciary, transportation, veterans, all of that, but also our visitors. And I don't want to dilute from that. So, Madam Chair, you and I spoke at length last night. I want to make sure that we have an agreement before we head into markup that either you or myself, and you can decide which, will provide the amendment for the sunset on that. Because I want to make sure that we're staying true to our statutory responsibilities for that. Without also putting somebody at risk who feels the need for security, and we can deal with that in the next budget cycle that particular office begins budgeting for their own security services.
Madam Chair.
Thank you, and Lead Nash, I appreciate your bringing up the comments, and I, with you, in total agreement that we need to ensure that the personnel who work on the Capitol Mall are safe. We need to ensure that constitutional officers are safe, and we need to ensure that visitors who actually are the people of the state of Minnesota who come to the Capitol are in fact safe, and as well as those traveling from other states. We need to make sure everyone is safe. I would entertain a sunset, but I think you and I need to work on what that correct sunset would look like. We had discussed a December ending date, and I have been advised against that because we aren't in session. So if something were to come up, there wouldn't be any way for us to fix it. So you and I can have that conversation about what an appropriate sunset would be so that we have the accurate and appropriate amount of time to work out the budgeting issues that would need to be resolved. Thank you.
Be back.
Mr. Chair, that's everything. We'll have more for the festivities later this week.
Nash, thank you for your time on that
committee. Representative Nadeau.
Representative Nadeau.
I'm sorry. I wasn't going to ask any questions, but I forgot there was one section that I didn't know anything about. Mm-hmm. So I apologize.
Your lead just talked, right?
I apologize, Lead Nash.
I don't have feelings. It's okay.
That's not true now. Okay. Representative Nadeau.
Representative Cleburne, can you just give me kind of an overall on this? It's in Section 3 of Article 2, I think, starting on line 6.10. So it's a $4.8 million grant to the City of St. Paul specifically talking about Community Vitality Grant and Community Voices Initiative. I'm not, my experience with Community Voices is oral histories. I'm assuming that's not what this is.
Chair Cleaborn?
Thank you. And Representative Nadeau, I appreciate the question. We appropriated this money last year for the community to come together and decide. There was a Vitality Task Force which met over the interim, which decided how the appropriation would be used to best serve the community and the economic development of the area. The goal is to decide how to best keep this area vibrant, right? It is my understanding that this is a name, not a specific grant to an entity. That is my understanding at this time, and if I am incorrect, I will work with the CAP board to get clarification on that. But thank you for checking.
And thank you for that. So if I go back and look, is there a, this is new language, and so if I go back and look, is there a specific thing that we're buying or that we're funding with this money? That's what I'm curious.
Sure, Cleaborn.
Thank you, Representative Nadeau. If you just Google the Vitality Task Force, you would be able to read their report online. The CAP board has that, I believe, online. The idea is that the money would go to the City of St. Paul Economic Development because they have experience in issuing grants, vetting grants, making sure that grants are appropriately used, as that's what they do, right? Economic and development, as opposed to the CAP board issuing the grants themselves. My understanding from the CAP board, and we can get clarification on this and I can follow up with you, is that the community would have ideas about which grants they would like to see go forward, but in fact it would be up to the City of St. Paul to vet them and make sure that the grants could be carried out in a way that is in keeping with grants management and with the best interest of the economic development for the community.
Representative Rideau.
Thank you, Representative Cleaborn.
Seeing no other questions, again, deadlines for amendments are Wednesday by noon. We'll do the markup on Thursday. And please keep your files together, as don't want to recreate them for you. But we are now adjourned until Thursday, April 18th.